at least 6 African-American women have died during or after encounters with police in 2015, including the death of Sandra Bland in Texas. Cases of police violence against African-American men have received a lot of national attention over the last year or so. Think of Freddie Gray, Dontre Hamilton, and Tony Robinson. But our next guest says violence against black women is rarely at the forefront of the public's understanding of police brutality, even though women of color disproportionately experience police brutality.
A new report looks at cases of police violence against African-American women is trying to bring attention to these issues. The report is called Say Her Name, Resisting Police Brutality Against Black Women. Kimberly Crenshaw is with us to talk about that report. She's a law professor at Columbia University and UCLA and director of the Center for Intersectionality and Social Policy Studies. She's one of the authors of the new report. Kimberly, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Now, when we think about media stories about conflicts between police and minority communities, I think usually the picture is a young black man. Why don't young African-American women and police violence get as much attention?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. First of all, generally speaking, men are more likely to encounter police in a violent situation than women across the board. So there are just more cases involving men. But I think secondly, and the point that our report, Say Her Name, is trying to address, is that the existing frames that we have for thinking about police violence basically feature male-male kind of conflict. Many times people understand police violence against black men as policing black masculinity. It's a consistent and coherent frame that comes, you know, from many, many generations of black men being subject to not just police violence, but lynching. And in fact, that's sort of the fundamental metaphor that we're dealing with. And while there is truth to that, which many bodies represent, it also misses the fact that black women, too, are subject to police violence. And their gender also contributes to the particular kind of exchanges, interactions, dynamics that happen between black women and the police. So our report is meant to both include black women in some of the frames that are familiar, like driving while black, which is what happened with Sandra Bland, and also frames that are unfamiliar. Black women are often damaged, injured, or even killed by the police when they come into their homes, when they come to investigate or come to help. So we want to make sure people understand that black women are also vulnerable and how they are vulnerable.
Well, first, what's the scope? How frequently is there police violence against black women?
Well, one of the problems with the entire movement against police violence is that the data are just not sufficiently aggregated enough to tell us things like prevalence and frequency. Most of the data that drives much of the campaign is data that we have collected from the media, from lawyers who represent families, from the internet. So there are no reliable figures. That's one of the recommendations that came from the 21st Century Policing Commission. With respect to black women, though, it makes the challenge even greater, because to the extent that we know about these cases from the media's decision to report on these cases, the likelihood that black women who are killed don't get reported because they don't fit the frame of male-male police black body interaction, the chances are that more of the cases having to do with black women aren't reported and we don't know about them than even the underreporting of black men. So we are saying Say Her Name, first of all, so the lives of the women who are lost are not forgotten, and also so we can get a better sense of what the nature of the problem is. You can't really fix a problem until you can comprehensively understand it, and that's what we're trying to do with the report, and that's what we're trying to do with the overall campaign.
And you mentioned Sandra Bland, the woman who died in police custody after what started as a routine traffic stop in Texas. Is her story typical? Does it tell us something wider about what you're reporting on in Say Her Name?
Well, it's telling us a couple of things. It's first of all telling us that the wide discretion that the Supreme Court gives to police officers is often abused, and abused in pursuit of discipline and punishment for behavior that police officers don't like. It's sometimes called, you know, contempt of cop, namely. So while the Supreme Court allows the police officers to issue orders based on the idea that one has to secure the life of the police officer, we see how this got used in Sandra Bland, basically to punish her for essentially saying, I don't have to stop smoking a cigarette in my car. This kind of indignity that many people who interact with the police have to encounter, or at least fear encountering, is like a landmine. You never know when that kind of encounter with a police officer will escalate into a threat to use coercive force, like I'm going to tase you. That's a serious exercise of police coercion. Whether it will escalate to that, or to being arrested, or to being incarcerated for several days over a minor offense. So yes, this looks very familiar to many of us who have to worry about whether the police will encounter us. And I think the additional piece with Sandra is the idea of a woman talking back in a way that prompts the police officer to feel the need to respond in an aggressive way. This is about race, and it's about masculinity. It's an intersectional dynamic going on here, and that's often what's missing when we don't have women in the frame.
Talking to Kimberly Crenshaw about the new report, Say Her Name, Resisting Police Brutality Against Black Women. We, I think, all know the name Sandra Bland now, but there are a lot of names in your report that we don't know. What kind of stories are out there that we haven't heard?
Well, we haven't heard very much the story of Michelle Cousseau or Tanisha Anderson. These were both women who were having a mental health crisis. And in both instances, the family called the police basically to protect their loved ones. And in both instances, the police arrived probably poorly trained in handling those kinds of instances. And instead of the women essentially being helped, they both ended up being killed. One, Tanisha Anderson, was killed by a takedown move. The precipitating issue was she didn't want to go to the hospital with the police and tried to get out of the car. And so they used excessive force to help her. And the other was Michelle Cousseau. She didn't want to go. The police busted into her home. She was standing there with a hammer. She had been changing the locks on her door. The policeman who encountered her shot her through the heart within seconds of the encounter, not based on anything she said, really not based on any claim that she made a move, but because she had a look on her face that made him fear his life. Well, what look on one's face is enough to warrant the kind of lethal force that was unleashed on Michelle? We see in this the kind of stereotypes. Stereotypes that we heard in the Mike Brown case, and stereotypes here. A black woman, a black body that happens to be a woman, is seen as superhuman, aggressive, and in need of this kind of coercive force for the safety of the officers. We think this is the example of the kind of ways that race shapes these interactions, and women are not benefited in any way by being women. They're seen as being as deadly and as lethal as men are seen.
Well, this is something that goes beyond a police department. This is society-wide. How do you start to tackle that in this police officer-black woman interaction?
Well, you're absolutely right, and that's why many of the solutions have to go beyond some of the traditional things. So body-worn cameras, absolutely important. Training, absolutely important. But we have to be a little bit more aggressive. Number one, we have to have a constitutional procedure that actually takes seriously the problem of racial profiling and racially disparate distribution of punishment. Right now, the Fourth Amendment virtually permits police officers to engage in racially targeted behavior as long as they can say that, well, there was a crime that was committed or an offense, like changing lanes. So we have to have far more robust understanding of what this threat is about so that there are real consequences to officers doing this. Secondly, there are certain things that the police shouldn't be asked to do. So the idea that every social problem is at the end a criminal problem is why the police are over-involved in calls for help or calls in mental health circumstances. So that's the second thing. And the last thing is we still live in a society that is shaped by race and shaped by gender. So we have an uphill uphill struggle to talk about the continuing significance of race that many people don't want to engage. And in that struggle, we have to talk about the continuing significance of gender. Black women, just like black men, live under stereotypes that were largely created a century ago. We have an understanding of that with respect to men. Now the time is to incorporate into that the way black women are also subject to racist stereotypes that undermine their safety.
What would need to happen to make sure that women, black women, are included in this conversation?
Well, one, quite frankly, is the name of the report and the reason that we started using the hashtag Say Her Name to address the erasure of black women as victims of police brutality. So that's something that anyone and everyone can do. Our report is called Say Her Name. It's on the African American Policy Forum website. People can download the report, learn the stories, make sure that in all of the work that we do to bring attention to this issue, black women's names are not excluded. That's number one. And when we start telling the stories, the stories of women killed in their own rooms, women who are gender nonconforming being killed because police are trying to police their gender, women who are killed because they are homeless. Once we start seeing the broad expanse of vulnerability, we'll have a sense of the kinds of demands, structural and institutional, we need to make so that all bodies are safe.
I think in Say Your Name, you reference a next report coming out. What is your next report? What's the next step you're working toward?
Well, so we have a couple of steps. Number one, we are trying to make sure that we are inclusive. So any episodes of police violence that include killing as well as sexually abusive police behavior, we want to hear about it. But more broadly, we think it's important to link police violence to other forms of racial violence. So one of our projects is called the Charleston Imperative. 3,000 feminists and anti-racists across the country, from Gloria Steinem and Eve Ensler to Michael Eric Dyson, Cornel West, have signed a statement saying that what happened in Charleston is linked to what's happening with police violence. We must have a feminist, anti-racist understanding that looks at the intersections of racism and patriarchy and allows us the tools, the rhetoric, and the imperative to address how racism is gendered and how patriarchy is raced. All of these are what grows out of the episodes that we've had with both police violence and with the Dylann Roof killing of the 9 individuals in Charleston. It's part of an overarching demand for our movement right now.
Kimberly, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Kimberly Crenshaw, law professor at Columbia University and UCLA. She was with us to talk about the report called Say Her Name, Resisting Police Brutality Against Black Women.